Now, if you told, I want to say 2017, Brenton, that he would have a member of the band Vacations on, he'd probably shit himself. And it's Joey has graciously given me his time. How are you going, mate?
Not too bad, man. How are you doing?
Great. Now, as I said, I've been following you boys since end of 2016, start of 2017.
Oh, wow. That's going back, really, in the big scheme of things. That goes further back than a lot of people. So, yeah.
Yeah, I used to drive from Bathurst to Gold Coast every 6 weeks because I went to uni in CSU in Bathurst, and used to do that coastal drive. And your guys' music, perfect for that long drives. It made the 12-hour drives feel like about 8 or 9. And ever since then, I've always been a huge fan. You guys are super interesting. You guys have always been on kind of the checklist for me, and it's like, got the press release and here we are. You guys recently played Laneway. And yep. I've been super critical of like lineups and all that type of stuff recently. And I was like, yep, they got the headliners right. They got this right. They got this right. And then you look right down the bottom and there's Vacations. I couldn't believe it that you guys were so far down on that lineup. When you get booked, do you know like where you're going to be on the lineup or like what day slot they want you to play? Or do you like, do you look at that lineup and go, fuck, where are we?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It just depends, festival to festival, show to show. It really depends. Sometimes that's part of the negotiation for your fee and stuff like that. So there's some acts that will consider it of high importance to get like high up on a lineup, you know, bigger text or whatever. So they'll, in some cases, I've heard of bands or acts foregoing part of their payment, sometimes a significant part of their payment for a show, in order to get a later time slot and a bigger text, because text is related to time slot nearly always. And so I've heard of people doing that. It's funny. It's a weird, like, ego-y kind of part of the music industry that I guess nobody likes to talk about, but everybody is involved with to some degree if you're in the touring music world. It's not something we really care about, to be honest. That's why we didn't really care for Laneway. We were just happy that they had us on, to be honest. There's kind of no hard feelings there. We're just like, whatever. It doesn't matter. You know, we'll just rock up and play. And if it means an early set, which is always going to be the case in Australia for us, at least at the moment, that just means we get to cut loose and have a good night sooner rather than having to wait all night to play. So, you know, it kind of has its ups and downs. It doesn't really bother us.
Yeah, as I said, I was super keen, and I'd seen you guys play once before. For some reason, you guys just never played where I was. I didn't know if that was a thing against me or, like, could just be circumstance. But I saw you guys play 2019 when you guys supported Spacey Jane on the Gold Coast, where I live.
Yep.
And it's super weird thinking that, like, the band that you guys were then supporting Spacey in a little room like that, and now you can, you know, you can go over to the US and you guys have millions and millions of streams. That's wild to me that, like, the span of a few years. Do you ever think about the shows like that where you supported, you know, going around the East Coast and went, oh, shit, you know, there's maybe 60, 70 people in the room. Now you guys perform in front of thousands.
I mean, naturally, that's a big part of it. We've kind of seen all ends of the spectrum. We've been doing this for a while now. You know, I think we're like, I'm coming up on like 8 years in this band, I think, maybe seven or eight years. It's kind of like, it has been, we've definitely seen all ends of it. You know, we've toured to, as you say, you know, 60 people in a room or less. You know, 60 would have been fantastic 8 years ago. You know, we would have been stoked with that. And then, yeah, it's true to say, you know, we've toured over in the US and obviously had a lot of success, you know, selling out tours and that kind of thing, which we're, you know, super proud of and also don't understand. Like, it's also crazy, you know, and it sometimes it doesn't feel like there's a one-to-one relationship with something you've done and that happening. You know, it's like a lot down to fate and luck and random chance as well. So it kind of, that makes it feel even crazier because it's, you know, you can't exactly connect how and why that happens sometimes. Mm. So, yeah, it's been a weird thing to see happen. And it is odd now to be in a position where, you know, different markets it's kind of a gross word to give it, but different markets around the world, different countries or continents, you know, like there being a huge disparity in how our shows go in all those different markets. They're kind of good everywhere, but, you know, to a much different scale depending on the continent. And that's just a weird part of the music industry that, you know, it's weird to see that now and wasn't really a part of the job description 8 years ago, put it that way.
It's interesting because, like, I do like TikTok lives, and I'm very interactive with my audience. So it's like, I don't want to have people on if people don't want to listen to them. And you guys got brought up quite a lot, and I was like, yeah, sweet, let's do that. And then other people were like, oh yeah, I saw they recently played in Australia. Like, are they coming back anytime soon? Not knowing that you guys were Australian.
Yeah, like, yeah, that happens, like, a lot. That's a really common one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time Americans, like, when we're on tour, every time Americans hear that we're Australians, they're like, what?
thought they were local boys. And it's like, it's interesting because, like, you're obviously from here, started here, and then you go to other markets, and it's awesome. Triple J has, like, really only gotten behind you guys in the last little bit. When they finally, and they've done that for a few bands recently as well, the Dregs come to mind, they've only got support recently. When that support finally does come, like, you've got a feature album, yeah, they did the, what's the, when they play their live performance, can't remember the name
of
it.
Live at the Wireless,
Live at the Wireless, there we go.
For Lameway, yep.
When those things finally do come, is it relief?
I guess it's relief, yeah. It's a funny one, because whether you like it or lump it or anything, it's a, obviously Triple J are a huge, like, central part of the Australian music scene, like, no yeah. two ways about it. You know, they are the almighty kind of, yeah, the magnum opus of music in Australia. You know, they're the be all and end all, and for good reason, for the most part too. You know, they obviously have huge influence over how bands can perform in this country, you know, like what size shows you can do, and to a massive degree festival lineups are determined by Triple J play and Triple J support, and, you know, how much in that world that you are, and they are kind of the thing that separates, at least in my mind, you know, your Taylor Swift's playing in stadiums and kind of the mainstream realm of music. They, you know, they are the gap, you know, they are the other side of it, the alternate and the club shows and festivals and stuff. That's all very much Triple J world. And it is what it is. And I mean, I listen to Triple J, so, you know, to finally be on there after so many years trying to make that happen, because I think I probably speak for, you know, I'm guessing here, but I think I probably speak for the majority of Australian, you know, musicians when I say that, you know, you spend a lot of your life growing up, you know, being a musician, aiming at that Triple J goal. You know, you can't help but, like, always desire to, you know, to be the in thing on Triple J. You know, it's just, like, part of growing up in the Australian music scene. And so to finally, like, get that is obviously a huge life achievement for us personally. You know, it feels fantastic, and to have that acceptance in your own home country is, you know, it's a beautiful thing, and obviously has repercussions for us as a band as well, you know, and our ability to tour here more frequently, or, you know, to a larger scale, because it is an expensive country to tour. That's something that doesn't get talked about much, but, you know, the term is fly dates, you know, like every show you're going to play in Australia, good chance it's a fly date. So, you know, a lot of flights, a lot of expense, and it is pretty hard to tour Australia, especially if you don't have that Triple J support. So, yeah, to finally get it makes our lives easier in a lot of ways. So it's really nice, yeah.
Obviously, that support's come after the American stuff. You're doing world tours. You're doing that cool stuff. It comes after, not really when you need it, but, like, it would have helped a lot more in the earlier days. Does it feel as sweet?
I mean, it feels good. I don't really, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with people about it and about the Triple J thing, and what I go back to be honest, you know, there's obviously a lot of musicians that might have some kind of resentment or annoyance, I guess, at Triple J for the way that they kind of have to pick and choose things. But I don't really see it as their fault. You know, they only have so much airtime, and they only have so many things they can focus on at once. And, you know, if we had got it earlier in our career, like, obviously that would have helped us at that stage. But in a lot of ways, we didn't need it, you know. We went and toured in the US and sold out our first, second and third tour, you know, and and did well in the UK and Europe. And so in a lot of ways we didn't need it, and when it finally came, we were more than happy to have it, you know. And we don't really hold a grudge against them or anything like that, because, you know, if us not getting that airtime means that somebody else who maybe deserves the airtime more or needs the airtime more, you know, because they don't have the luck of and the random chance of getting that support overseas, you know, that we did through TikTok and the internet. You know, if another act doesn't have any of that and their only hope of, you know, building a music career is through kind of the Triple J world, then, you know, all power to them. And I'm happy for those people to get those slots and that. And we finally did get the support, and we're happy for it now that it's there, you know, so.
It's nice to have people actually go, oh yeah, these are Aussie boys. Yeah, I listen to Vacations. I've been on this train for almost 10 years, and it's nice that people are actually fucking joining it.
Thanks, man.
You guys obviously have this was like I've been listening to music for ages, but like this is my first actually going to research like how good you guys have been doing and all that type of stuff, and it was nice to be like, fuck yeah, good on them. But you've got like hundreds of millions of streams, you get to tour the world, you sell out shows in America. How do you keep that ego in check to make sure that, you know, you're still authentic, you're not gonna go home and be like, yeah, we did this, like a bit of an asshole?
Well, I think it came about naturally, really, for us, because it did take some years for us to build it. You know, we did tour after tour. I mean, small tours, not really big tours, but tour after tour in Australia, or trip after trip. You know, going down to Melbourne to play shows, or going up to Brisbane to play shows from Nui, and just trips down the road to Sydney to play shows. You know, to nobody for a few years there, trying to, you know, launch our career, trying to get a foothold, trying to start, and trying to get that, you know, Triple J support. Back in those days. And so it, you know, it has a way of humbling any musician, you know what I mean? Just like consistently doing your best and you know, and not really seeing much for it, you know, playing to 30 or 40 people in Melbourne, you know, like driving for 11 hours to get there, play to 40 people, and then you can't afford accommodation, so you drive home that night, which is something we did once upon a time.
Hostels aren't that cheap anymore.
Yeah, that's right. So that has like a natural way of humbling you a bit, I think. So we went into it kind of just dumbfounded by, you know, being able to do what we can now do. And yeah, we've seen how hard it can be. So to then see what it's like when it's finally paying off, yeah, it humbles you, I think.
Now, I was going through the album the last couple of days, like any good interviewer should. Is it
Homework.
is yeah, exactly. Just research, mate. Is there any song on the album where you're like, this song's it's better than what it's getting? Like, this one deserves way more, because I think there's one on there.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it depends which member of the band you ask. For me, I don't know, maybe Midwest, like that song. I mean, it did kind of do well, but I don't know. Maybe I want it to keep doing well or something. I don't know. We also haven't pushed it to radio overseas yet or anything, but yeah, I love that song, and more than anything, we really found a new love for that song playing it live. And when we play it live, like, it's just such a I don't know, it's such like a high energy song, and so fun and dancey and that. So that one for me is like a, you know, a sweet spot of the album that I really like, and I just hope that song has a long life, because I want to keep playing it forever, you know.
Overused, pretty good.
Yeah,
A little
I like that
fan.
song. yeah yeah
If
yeah
you'd be
thank
bad to it
you
now, fuck that.
Yeah.
You guys have heaps of successful songs, right? And
yep.
that's over like a lot of years, and that, you know, they've gotten streams at different points. How do you sort
Yep.
that set list out? Especially, like, is it different set list for different countries? Like, I've been told that I've never been overseas, but I've been told that, you know, like, overseas gigs, their audiences are very different. So when you come back to Australia to go, all right, heaps of new audience are probably seeing this, do we bring out the old hits? Do we just play what we think's our best at the moment? Like, what runs through the band's head?
I mean, it's tricky. There's no like perfect solution, I guess. Yeah, it's kind of a lot of back and forth between all of us, because we all have favorite songs, we all have least favorite songs, we all have songs that we kind of want to get rid of in the set, but might disagree with each other and that. So it's a lot of back and forth. We have a Slack channel that is just like set lists basically, and we just back and forth. Yeah, it's kind of tricky. I don't think it's it maybe is like a little bit. It's like 50% trying to make the set match the place that you are. So, you know, when we're playing in the US, we have to bring out a little bit, maybe proportionally more of that older stuff, because that was the first place that took up our music, and the first place we had listeners for like our earliest music was all in the US. So those fans have a higher chance of wanting to hear the really old stuff. Whereas like in Australia, you know, the vast majority of people are keen to hear newer stuff. So, you know, but that's just based on our guesses as well and assumptions. So it is kind of tricky. But look, I think the solution is quantity anyway. So we just, luckily we headline our shows these days, so we get to play for a little bit longer and cover a lot more of that material anyway. So it's kind of a non-issue, but yeah, it's more the order of the set that we bicker about, and you know, like what song you want to like have a moment, and not every song can have like a big moment, you know, because you also got to get through all the songs. So yeah, and we just kind of, I don't know, have fun with it and back and forth and argue.
It's like one of you get to pick the set list order each gig or something, like Elaine, where you had what, 4 or 5 shows. So it's like we get one.
Yeah.
One thing I don't get to sort out. You said that your biggest audience was America first, and you said you don't know why, but like, what do you think the major difference is with America to Australia in terms of listening to your music? Like, I don't get how it went big there first and they like the older stuff, because like they're usually like present, want new stuff, and Australia's usually the other way, right? So have you guys, I know you said you didn't figure it out, but is there any inkling where you thought you had it sorted?
Yeah, I guess, well, the US thing, it's like they were the first to, so the, I guess, okay, yeah, you got to start at the grassroots level, which is that in the US, you know, it's different to Australia, where, you know, they don't have the big Triple J, they don't have like one radio station that is like the be all and end all of the music industry. They have thousands and thousands of radio stations, you know, all of which are like just as popular as each other. You know, there's a few big ones, like you have your iHeartRadio and like Sirius XMU, like big radio stations like that, but you know, they have just tons. So like people aren't as hooked into the same thing, the same, you know, like Triple J here is all of Australia, and everyone knows that, and everyone knows kind of what's big on Triple J at any given time if they're into the Australian music scene. Yeah, it just doesn't exist there. So they're more like online, you know, they're more on the internet. And our early stuff we released like through SoundCloud as well as the other platforms. And at that time that was a popular platform to release free music. And people just found it there and ran with it. And a lot of re-uploads like on YouTube and stuff. And then when the TikTok age came, people just found that old music and thought it, you know, and it suited the platform, and people would put our old songs on TikTok, you know, make like trends out of it or whatever, and paired it out. Like there was an original one that paired our old song Young with a clip from Skins, that old TV show. Yeah, and we started a whole TikTok thing, and there's also been like a lot of YouTube views early on and stuff like that. So just, yeah, I think the US fan base is much more on the internet in a much bigger way than like Australian music listeners kind of typically are. Yeah, more things are accessible to them because they're not on train tracks of kind of what to listen to.
Which makes so much sense. I was on TikTok this morning, and my phone's been listening to me talk again, and someone did a review like a couple days ago of the Days EP, and like, you know how like they rank it and they rank the songs, and everyone's like, oh my god, this was my quarantine stuff, and I'm guessing they're all American. I'm like, it's even what, 9 years in the future, they're like still in love with it. Your singer Campbell,
yep,
he's moved to America.
Yep.
Are all you the rest of you boys still in Australia?
Yeah, so Campbell, our front person and kind of guitarist, lives in Los Angeles. He moved there, god, be about more than six months ago now, maybe a year ago now at this point. And our bass player Jake and myself live in Newcastle and Newcastle surrounds, and then our lead guitarist Nate Delazotti just moved to Melbourne and lives in Melbourne now. He's spent a lot of time in there, down there in the past, and he's back there now, living there for now. It's kind of crazy.
How does that work for band practice?
Well, you don't need band practice. Nah, we basically don't. Like we just see each other enough that, we tour pretty heavily. So we just fit in like large chunks of studio time around tours. So we usually get into a studio before we do a tour and just like jam together for 4 or 5 days or whatever, whatever time allows. Do that kind of thing. And we record music a lot, if it's stuff that doesn't get released and stuff that we're just slowly working on. So we have studio time together pretty frequently. Yeah, so it just works out that way. We used to have like a regular band practice when we were all living in Newcastle. We used to practice every Monday all day. But yeah, it's not like super necessary. It's obviously fun and we loved doing it, but yeah, it's not like super necessary. We're able to make it work living wherever we want to live, so that's cool.
How's the creation of songs come about then? Is it just like a Zoom, or it's like, oh, I've got an idea for this, let's send over the files, or like the group chat's just on fire all the time?
Combination of things, dude. Like, so usually initial ideas for songs will come from Campbell. He'll like demo out, it might be a guitar riff, or it might just be a synth progression, or like a little bit of a vocal melody idea, something simple. Like demo-y stuff, and then we'll all just like kind of add parts to it. So at the moment these days, living kind of apart, our method is a little bit more like, maybe an initial demo from Campbell or an initial demo from Nate in Melbourne, and then we'll just bounce stems between each other and kind of add our respective parts to them and just kind of work on them. And then also we have those like pillars within the year where we're together and in the same place, and we just have studio time at that point. And whatever demos have accrued since the last time we were in the studio together, we then just pull them out and work on them together when we are together. So yeah, we have like concentrated periods of time where we'll work on everything, and then we split again and do our personal life stuff, get back together for a tour, work on stuff, it kind of works in waves like that.
That must be awesome when you've got heaps of demos and you come together and you get to play it for the first time, right?
Yeah, I mean it's super fun. I love working on new music. That's always been a favorite part for me of the whole process, and it is definitely a favorite part for everyone in the band, to be honest, as well. We love working in the studio, even if it doesn't matter, like it doesn't need to get released or it doesn't need to be working towards an album or whatever. Like just working in the studio is so fun. I mean, that's why most people are in music, because they like making music. So we're no different. We absolutely love that whole process. Just hanging out with your best friends, in the studio or whatever it's the best, So we love that.
Plus, you'd have the like not seeing each other every week in person. So it's like the hell yeah, like we're all getting together. It's like a boys trip. You're just making like hectic music that millions of people are going to listen to.
Yeah, 100%. It's very fun, very hype.
It's cool that a lot of you guys still live here, because like I've kind of built a platform on being critical of and just kind of shining a light on what I think of what's going around the Australian music scene. And you would have seen Splendour cancel, you'd see Groovin cancel, you'd see everything falling down around us. Gigs aren't selling out here. As you said, the cost to, our country's huge. You can't just drive from Melbourne to Perth. So you obviously see it here, but then you go and travel the rest of the world and America and that type of stuff. So are you seeing them across the world have the same problem that we're having? Or is this kind of just like a unique thing to us that we just suck at selling out gigs and going to festivals and shit?
Look, I think it's a bit of both. It's a multivariate, like a lot of things in life. There's a lot of things contributing to it. I'm definitely not an expert at festivals or anything. But I do have my opinions and get, privy to some information. And I don't know, from my perspective, as I said, it's a multivariate. There's a few things going on. To answer your question, no, like I haven't really seen it happening in other countries. Like when we're on tour, I see festivals we play overseas as well as festivals that are just on overseas, maybe when we're over, like in the US, I see festivals that are on in cities we're in and stuff like that. And that, at least from what I can see, they're not having the same problems. So there's definitely an aspect of the problem that is Australian specific, which at least from what I've heard, is what everyone's been talking about, which is, festivals are having a kind of double whammy of really difficult overhead costs in terms of insuring their festivals, which are then making it incredibly difficult to afford the kind of headline acts that people have grown accustomed to or expect. Yeah, and then they're also getting compared to massive festivals overseas as well, and the lineups that those festivals get, like Glastonbury's and Lollapalooza's and that kind of thing, which they just can't reasonably compete with. Like we're in a pretty isolated part of the world. It's expensive for artists to get here, so it's hard. Regular punters, I don't think understand how much some of those acts really cost to get here. It is an astronomical cost. Like just for fun sometimes. I remember, for years I've done this, like when I'll see a festival lineup or something, you just like crunch like really basic numbers, like how many tickets, how big is the capacity of the festival, and then how much are tickets, and you can do a super rough like calculation of how much money is being generated by the ticket sales. And then you look at the lineup that they've had to produce to sell that amount of tickets, and you're like, there's no way they can afford that. Like, how is that possible? And I used to think, like, I don't get it. Like, how do they afford that? And now they've all started canceling, and I'm like, well, yeah, they can't. It's tricky. It's really
And it's
tricky. So I feel sorry for those promoters and those people that are putting on, that are, well, trying to and failing to put on festivals in Australia at the moment. And part of it is also, undeniably an issue with lineups. I don't want to be too critical because, as I say, I'm not an expert on festivals, and maybe they have trouble finding acts that are willing to play for the cost that they have to provide. But I don't know. I haven't been particularly. I'll say this: I haven't been particularly excited to go to many festivals lately. That's my diplomatic answer. You
That's
wouldn't get
good.
me out of bed to go to a fair few of those lineups lately. So,
And
yeah, for better or
that's
for
not
worse.
you not supporting or anything. That's like you just thinking as a punter going like, am I going to spend $600 on that? I don't think
Probably not.
so.
Have I seen that act 7 times before? Yes.
I've had this, and I have a lot of lives on it, and that's a lot of the I cop heaps of abuse, which is heaps of fun. But like we all have to just kind of have an honest conversation with ourselves, and all the factors you just said, with the one thing we can agree on is that one thing's not going to fix it all. But
Nah,
open discussion,
that's
open
right.
dialogue with artists, with bands, with organizers, just having an open chat, I feel like that's a good way of going to fix the
There's a
problem.
there's another side of it that this is just a thought. Like, as I said, I'm no expert, but a side of it that I can't help but notice is that more and more bands and acts are relying on festivals to be their kind of cash cows. Like, it is widely known in the music industry that festivals are where bands really can get their paycheck. That's like your prize. That's like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Like, if you can achieve like a far way up the lineup kind of a slot at a festival, like that pays for, whatever else you want to do. That's your cash cow. But the festivals also can't afford that, or they're not doing well. So it's kind of a weird imbalance where I think because not as many people maybe are going to club shows and supporting bands at venue shows as maybe they did, in decades past, that's leaving bands in a position where they have to go for that cash cow in festivals, and the festivals can't really provide that anymore. So I think that is also a factor, that maybe if venue shows and club shows were more viable for actually making money for bands, which for, majority of Australian touring bands absolutely are not profitable or viable. They just do them to kind of maintain a status quo, if you will. So maybe if they were more valuable to touring artists on a smaller level, then they wouldn't have to be looking so much for that cash cow in a festival. They could do a cheaper slot at a festival, and then the festival can do better,
The bang for your buck type ones, like, and that's what Splendor used to be so good for, and I feel like Laneway did it really well this year in an environment where, it's really hard to get those headliners, but like there was some really good acts in there that, I hadn't seen or hadn't come to Australia, and you're like, yep, I bet you still expensive, but like they're not going to cost as much as the other ones. Let's take it back to your
Absolutely.
band
Yes, yes.
because you guys obviously just played Laneway. You're cracking into the festival scene in Australia. You get to do that national thing. You've got Australia on your tour for dates. With all this shit happening in our country and our music scene, does that make you go, fuck, like do we kind of hold off on Australian shows? Do we book those Australian festivals moving forward? Do we like just see how it plays out, or do you just go, nah, we want to play there, that's our home, let's book them?
Look, it's I think it's a balance of the two. We were pretty keen to do more of it because Laneway was very fun. And it's obviously so close to where the majority of us live that it's an easier form of touring, you know, like no long haul, stopover flights to Europe, that kind of thing. So it's like appetizing to play shows here. And we're also excited because we were able, you know, with the opportunity we got to play Laneway, we're also able to finally be able to show the kind of music industry here that we can also move numbers, you know, like to have 7,000-8,000 people show up to all of our sets, even though we were playing second or third on the day, you know, that was like we finally got the opportunity to show people that, you know, we have a base of people here that want to see us play. And so we kind of had the appetite to do more of that and play more festivals and more shows here because it's our backyard. But we're also, you know, conscious of the fact that, you know, we've kind of been having a recurring problem for years where it's a good problem to have, but we just like we'll always try and be doing a few more shows, and we want to try and get to more markets and like want to get to more places that are doing better for us all the time, you know, because we're doing them. But then we end up with kind of too many shows in the year, and it's kind of, you know, burning us out a little bit, or it has in the past. Yeah. So we're trying to be more conscious of that this year and just like limiting our amount of kind of, we're treating it as like how many weeks we spend on the road in the year to make a cohesive kind of year that is not going to burn us out, but is also going to get us everywhere we want to go. And then our problem was solved here anyway, in a large part, because most of the festivals didn't want us to play. And then they all cancelled, but
no correlation though, right?
No, there's no correlation. Don't worry about that.
What's that ideal like weeks on the road look for? Like what's that balance?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of shooting. We were originally going to shoot for like, I think like 14, 15 weeks. That might end up more like 18 weeks, I think. But I think when you get towards 20 weeks, like 22 weeks touring in a year, that is like burnout level. That's brutal. Okay. Yeah. So we're trying to avoid that. So I think if we, at least from my perspective, I'm happier for a little bit more touring rather than a little bit less, because I love it. But we all, you know, personally have, you know, our own preferences. But I think if we land somewhere between 15 and 20 weeks touring, that's a really healthy life balance and split. It means that we can all focus on other things and making new music and stuff like that as well. Cause obviously touring is not the only thing we do, you know, like actually making music, spending time together, not making music as well is, you know, these are all parts of the equation that we have to take into consideration. And yeah,
I feel like a lot of people don't think burnout's a real thing until they get it. And burnout, like it's physically you're fine, but your brain just physically can't do it. And I had that at the end of last year, and I had to have like 4 months off because I was just like, I'm done. Let's find the balance. Yeah. So,
look, it happens to the best of us 100%. We have a good work ethic in the band, I think, and we do value consistently trying to, you know, to still get out there, to still tour, to still work on music all the time. But yeah, we've just got to be careful not to overwork ourselves, because it is a thing, and it's a thing in all industries too. It's not just music. Like I think anybody can burn out, you know, and yeah, it's something that not a lot of people are talking about, but it's a very real thing. We know that we're not going to produce the best music we can, and that we're not going to put on the best shows we can if we're just burnt out, you know. Yeah. Yeah, like we had some points in the last couple of years where, you know, you're on your fifth show or sixth show in a row nights consecutively, you know, so you've played five nights in a row and then you're on your sixth. And it's just like you're like a zombie, you know, like it's just like you're in autopilot, you know.
Oh, I'd listen to podcasts back and it's like I can't turn down opportunities of like these artists, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just listening to them back and I'm just like, fuck. Like, you know, you're better than that. You know, you're better than that. And you're delivering this shit. So I completely get that. Now I'm an early mornings man, and I'm always, watching like morning shows and that type of shit. So you guys getting on like American talk shows, like what was it? CBS and, Jimmy Fallon,
Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah.
What's obviously like they're cool experiences, but like, what do you actually get out of them? Like when are they offered to you, or it's like, is it just like a passing thing, or like what's the actual kind of outcome?
In terms of outcome, I think that ideally it's exposure, right? Like it's the same reason you do any media interaction kind of thing, you know. It's ideally exposure, and that's what we try and do. It's also a great experience to do such a almost generic, you know, like established part of the media landscape, you know, like a late night show. Like it's just something you know of being a thing since, you know, at least me, since I was young, you know, and to actually be on one is like, it's kind of like a fun, I don't know, life moment. I don't know how popular they are anymore these days. I really couldn't tell you. I think they probably suffer from the same thing as the majority of mainstream media these days, with diminishing popularity. But I don't know, all they you know, re-upload the like clip format stuff from it, you know, online, and that stuff all did really well. And yeah, I don't know. It's also like a legitimacy thing, I think, that you get to claim from doing something like that, where it's like, if you're seen in big media like that, and you know, you're able to perform and you're able to like show up, you know, have your buttons done up and be able to play your instruments in a live setting on a show like that. You know, it's like it's a legitimacy that you gain in the music industry. And that certainly, I don't know how relevant that is here in Australia, but at least in the US, that's like a form of legitimacy that is valuable for our career, you know.
Especially with your market, you know, as
like,
well.
Yeah, totally. And for the music industry, like festival promoters and things like that, are going to see that, or it's something you can send in your email. You know what I mean? It's like ammunition for our booking agent and our management, stuff like that. So, yeah. And it's also, it was super fun for us to do as well. You know, media stuff is usually really, really fun. So,
are you telling me that like Sunrise or Today haven't reached out and like seen the performances and like, get out, get out, Guy Sebastian, we'll get vacations on? None of those come in?
No, they haven't. I mean, I would love to do that. That'd be sick. So I don't know, maybe we need to ask. I don't know. Look, you've given me an assignment for the afternoon. I'm going to get my management.
Obviously, we talked about the music scene here not doing great. Do other like Aussie up and coming bands, like you obviously live here, do they go, what's the secret to doing it overseas? What's the secret to, like, have any bands or acts reached out to be like, can you give us any kind of advice to get started over there?
To be honest, no, not really. I don't really get asked for advice ever. I don't know if we're in the position to give it or not. I mean, I have advice I guess I could give, but we don't. Yeah, no, not really. Like, haven't really been hit up for advice much. Maybe, like, when we're doing shows and, you know, we have friends, obviously, we've toured for years and have friends in cities in Australia and that kind of thing. And, yeah, like, people, more than anything, just be kind of dumbfounded by the fact that what happened to us has happened, you know. But not necessarily after any advice, I guess. People can probably see that, that you know, it's luck as much as anything else. So we might not have the best advice to give.
just the first question is, like, how dare you? But,
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, why not me? How dare you?
I have one last question for you. Aussie act that and Aussie song, two different, or they can be from the same band or whatever. Aussie act and song that you've just got on repeat at the moment that you absolutely love, that you just can't get out of your head at the moment.
Definitely at the moment, like the last few days. I mean, it might sound biased. It probably is because they're mates and we just toured with them. But New Last Dinosaurs is really good. As like a lifelong, I don't know about lifelong, but a very, very long-term fan of Last Dinosaurs. They're one of the first. They were the first band I ever saw play at a festival. I went to Groove in the Moo when I was like, I don't even know how old I was, maybe like 15 or 16, because it was all ages as well as licensed.
Yeah.
And and snuck my yogurt sachets of vodka in my shoes, the whole deal, and got in super early to see Last Dinosaurs play at Maitland Groove in the Moo. It was a huge fan of them, always have been. And just to see them releasing some of the best music that they've written at the moment is awesome, you know, after all this time, and they're having huge success overseas as well. Is really nice. So Slow by Last Dinosaurs, that would be my song, I would say. I've been obsessed with that song the last few days. Also MPD as well.
When you said I'm going to be a bit biased here, I thought you were going to say your own music. and you know what, that would be fair enough, because the album's great. Go through the catalog, it's awesome. Joey from Vacations, you can see these guys in July on the East Coast.
Yep. We're touring in July.
get your tickets. Also, if you didn't get to catch them at Laneway, your hotels might have had a late booking or whatever. It's fine. I had to run. But Joey, thanks for coming on. Enjoy the chats, and hopefully more Aussies listen to your music.
Thanks, Brenton. I appreciate it, man. And thanks for having me on. It's awesome. It's nice to see an Australian doing stuff like this. It's not super common, weirdly enough, in the Australian music scene. And to have someone like you actually, just providing, I don't know, a young person's just another opinion on Australian music, and have somebody talking about this stuff is awesome. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you getting me on.
To keep up to date with all things Breaking Through, make sure to check out our socials.